So I'm a few months into using Barefaced skincare every day, and like so many of you who have tried these products, I am loving them. The first thing I noticed was a change in the texture of my skin and the size of my pores. But my favorite thing about Barefaced is that I noticed my skin glowing in a way it hasn't in years. It just looks healthier. I've gone from a bathroom counter scattered with a hodgepodge of products to a simple skincare regimen that is easy to be consistent with every day. Barefaced was founded by nurse practitioner Jordan Harper, who is passionate about science-backed skincare education, and she shares the best skincare tips over on their Barefaced Instagram. You can even text her team of skincare specialists for a complimentary consult to answer any questions you may have. They will recommend exactly what you need from the comfort of your couch. Their number is on the Barefaced Instagram, and I'll put the number in the show notes as well. They're big fans of the podcast and have offered Got It From My Mama podcast listeners 15% off their first purchase by using code MAMA15. More than likely, you are one of the millions of people who watched the reality TV show Duck Dynasty in its 11 seasons and fell in love with the Robertson family. Corey Robertson, Willie's wife, and Sadie, their daughter, have both built a beautiful ministry, speaking and encouraging audiences around the country. They have authored books, created podcasts, and now Corey has a credit as a movie producer with the new film, The Blind. I am so inspired by how this family stayed true to themselves and their faith and impacted so many people while in the midst of a chaotic Hollywood spotlight. I think you'll really enjoy this conversation and be inspired by Corey as a wife, a mother of six, a mother-in-law, and now a grandmother to seven children, all before the age of 50. Let's get started. Would you be surprised if that little girl that grew up in Louisiana knew that I would be introducing you at this stage of life as a reality TV star, an author of books and devotionals, a producer of a movie? I mean, that has to just kind of rock your world a little bit when you think about those titles that now you deservedly have.
Absolutely. I can't believe it. I actually can't. It's so funny that you say that, because whenever I was a kid, I was actually pretty shy and quiet. And my family ran a summer camp, and we still do. Camp Chioka is still a part of our family life and our family story forever. But then my mom was always working out at campus in the summer, and I was this little quiet kid. And so one of the camp directors, I remember one year, started the Corey Howard fan club, because he said I didn't get enough attention because I was so quiet and just did my own thing and all this stuff. And so he actually says he was the first president of my fan club back when I was, like, you know, 6 years old.
So. Oh, that's so funny. So with that being your personality, what was that transition like for you to all of a sudden be kind of catapulted into the spotlight? Because I think part of the Duck Dynasty story is how it grew so much bigger than you guys could have ever expected when you initially said yes to, you know, what was being offered.
Yeah, it did. But, you know, I feel like God somehow prepared us and just kind of gave us this, like, a little bit more opportunities. And in at each one, he was preparing us for what was to come, so that when it did happen, now looking back, of course, it was insane. Like, we have this one video that Willie has on his phone, and he says he remembers thinking that day, I should just video this because this is crazy, and one day we'll look back. But we had no idea people would show up at our warehouse, you know, whenever the show happened. Of course, we were just making the show here in West Monroe, Louisiana, small town, and people just started showing up. And I mean, our parking lot would be full of cars. There'd be, you know, license plates, and still are, honestly. People come here all the time, and now we have a little museum, and we have a store and all that. But at that time, we had nothing. We didn't even have a store here. And so, people just started showing up, and it would just be packed. There were literally thousands of people outside of our warehouse.
Wow.
Every day when we would come out. So he has a video where people are just, like, screaming. It's like you're in a parade. And when you just come, we leave every day when we would leave work. And that's what it was like during that time period. And somehow I feel like God just kind of protects your heart and prepares you. Mm-hmm. Or he did that for us and just kind of carried us through it to where, when it was happening, it didn't even feel, honestly, that weird. that now you look back on and you're like, that was crazy.
Yeah, it's actually more than you realized at the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Were you, with the initial offer, I'm sure that had to be like, I mean, it's a big family and you guys were all going to be involved. I guess that was a really big decision for you guys to make, mm-hmm. as far as going from, you know, what seemed like everyday life for you. And then, you know, particularly probably considering raising your children in the spotlight and some of the impact mm-hmm. of that. What did those conversations look like? And was it an easy yes for you? Or, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure it involves some prayer and just, you know, stepping out on faith through the whole process. But what was that decision like, okay, we're going to do this? Like,
yeah. Well, when I say, I think there was some kind of gradual things that helped it along the way. But so we actually, I kind of get the credit of realizing that the Robertson family should have a reality TV show, because I looked over at Willie one day and I was like, I think we could do reality TV. And he was like, seriously? And I said, your family's not normal. And that's pretty much how it started. And he was like, what? We're totally normal. I was like, no, you're not.
That's probably what he thought.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I was like, no, like Uncle Si, that's not normal. But, but yeah, so I actually, I'll never forget. I was watching, an episode of American Chopper. I don't know if you remember that show.
It was a show about A&E as well, right?
Yeah. It was, actually, I don't know. It may have been, I need to look back at that.
Okay.
But it was, maybe History Channel.
Oh, okay.
They're, families. But anyway, so it was about, you know, a father and sons who own this motorcycle shop. And I remember watching it and thinking, people aren't watching the show because of the motorcycles. They're watching it for the family dynamics. And that's what, and so I thought, you know, I feel like our family has enough interesting family dynamics that could be interesting. And so I actually wrote an email to like TLC and some of the different, you know, production offices and said, hey, our family has a show. This, you know, we have family business. I really think it might be interesting, and got zero interest, like none at all. And
that was honestly, you that sent the email?
Yes, I did. Wow. Yes. And, you know, I never really thought about me being on it. I'm like, you know, you and your brothers, y'all are interesting. Y'all are funny, whatever, you know. Yeah. But so I sent the email and got zero response whatsoever. And then we actually started it. We partnered with a gun company called Benelli Guns, and we did it on, we did a show on the Outdoor Channel. So Outdoor Channel is a network that's like only like serious hunters watch Outdoor Channel.
Yeah, I know what Outdoor Channel is, but yeah, it's not your mom audience.
Exactly. Exactly. So, but what we did was we edited it and made it, you know, more like a reality show and more that, that wives and kids would watch with their husbands, you know, on Outdoor Channel. And so we did that for, I think, about three seasons. And that's when we got recognized from, you know, someone in Hollywood. And we got an email just to our information at duckcommander.com. Like, hey, we've seen your show. We think it, you know, it has the potential of doing something big. And I think that was the point that we kind of had to really say, oh, okay, like before that, it was fun and interesting and we're doing this and it was selling a lot of duck calls and, you know, it was kind of all part of our family business. But when we kind of got approached by someone in like Hollywood, that's when we thought, okay, this has the potential to really make or break our family. Like we could, if we don't go into this with the heart's posture toward God, with our faith, our roots really deep in our faith, then it could destroy us. Cause you see kind of, that's what happens a lot of times.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, we did. We all came together as a family and just very specific, had dinner and all sat down and said, we're going to have a time of prayer about this. And if it's not for God's glory, we don't want it. Never forget Kay saying, like in the prayer, her saying, if this does not serve you, God, if it's not good for our family, take it away. Do not allow it to happen.
Right.
And so we really just went into it with that posture of, you know, our family, we're good. And, we trust God in it. And if he has this for us, then we're going to keep taking that step forward and keep moving. But if it doesn't happen for us, then we're going to step away. Or if it's bad for us, then we're going to step away. And so that was the posture that we kind of went into it with. And, one thing that was interesting was how many well-meaning Christians were like, oh, don't do it. You know, you should be scared. Don't get into Hollywood. You're going to end up divorced and your kids are going to be on drugs. You know? And I was like, you know, that happens to people that like work in a bank or or, you know, our school teachers or whatever, you know, there's no guarantees about your family, whether you're in the spotlight or not. But for us, it really came down to like, are we, we're not called to be, live in fear or to be in fear of the world. We, you know, actually live with the Spirit of God in us, and we are called to be light in the world and salt in, on the earth. And, we really felt like that we were in a position to do that in a different way than we've ever done before. And so we weren't going to be scared or back down or shy away from it.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys really found, you know, purpose on in every platform that has been presented to you, whether to find a purpose for the Lord, and all of that is, I think, what you guys did and did so well and continue to do. I mean, there's still so much more, you know, that you guys have branched out and done and taken big leaps of faith with as well. So
thank you guys.
Before we move on, I wanted to ask, did you set some boundaries about what it would look like to film Fit Your Family and the kids and time there? Yeah. Like, how did you go into that?
So, yes, interestingly, because, you know, particularly in the South, you raise your kids to like respect adults and obey adults and all that. But then all of a sudden we have these kids that are going to be in situations with, you know, we have a film crew here. We have all this happening, you know, and so that was some different conversation that we had to have and said like, hey, you know, our kids are filming, you know, we're on in scenes and everything. So we would tell them, you know, if there's something that they ask you to do that you would not do in your normal life, then just say no. You have total freedom to say no. And there was one time when one of our sons who really struggled with complaining, he was my, like, you know,
Eeyore.
Yeah, exactly. Like that, you know. And so we had tons of conversations about not complaining, not about the show, just in normal life. Like, we don't complain. Like, you know, when you get asked to do something, you say, yes, ma'am, no, sir, whatever.
Yeah.
So there was an episode where the kids were having to like clean up a field or something. And he and the director was like, well, aren't you tired? Don't you, you know, wish your mom would not make you do this? And kind of trying to like egg him on to complain.
Put that out,
you know?
Of him. Yeah,
exactly. And he was like, you know, you could complain a little bit. You can tell me if you, and he was like, no, my mom said I can't complain. And then he's like, I have to go ask mom. So he comes over and is like, mom, can I complain? I was like, no. So there were some conversations just to say like, hey, like you are you on this show.
Yeah.
And you know, this is, it's a television show. So, you know, we're enacting, you know, skits or whatever that we're doing, but you're still playing you, and you, all the ways that you would live your life and walk around this earth as, and the ways that our faith affects you in your normal life is the same when you're on this television show. So we had tons of conversations, and within our family, you know, as well, that first, I remember that first year with filming was particularly hard because I'm not a crier, like, but I remember crying so much that first season, just trying to figure out and work through like, okay, who are we, you know, and what they want of us on this television screen and who I am in real life and how does that all kind of come together?
Yeah.
And, you have to really figure that out and know like where your roots have to be really, really deep to kind of withstand that. And I do remember also seeing other, you know, people in the spotlight, seeing an interview with a young celebrity and kind of sensing that in their spirit of that, you know, that tension of that, of, okay, who am I, you know, in this, and how, and the loneliness that can come with early fame, and how, what does that feel like? And how do you kind of like know who's for you and who's against you? And I don't know, it gave me a real heart for particularly young people that experience fame or success at an early age, because as a 40-year-old woman, it was hard, you know,
and
walking through that with our kids, there were hard parts about it that we had to navigate and through and really just kind of, like I said, dig those roots really deep.
Yeah. And that, you know, that's kind of the heart behind this. The podcast started so organically of just genuinely wanting to talk to other moms about the exact thing you're talking about. How did they navigate like the early days as things were happening? And so, I mean, we say it a lot, but fame and whatever amount of it impacts the entire family. Mm-hmm. Not even, of course, in your case, it's a little bit extreme because the whole family was involved. I mean, siblings.
Which was also, I think, helpful in a way because we were all going through it together. So we could all talk about it together. We talked about that before, how it was a blessing that we kind of were all in the same position. So we could bounce off each other rather than like one person, which is generally the case. One person experiences the same.
Yes.
And then everyone else is trying to kind of figure out what that means for them and for the family and the dynamics and everything.
Tell me how you ended up in this crazy family. I mean, you guys, I read either you met at Harding University or you met in the third grade. Which one is it?
We met in the third grade. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Between third and fourth grade at summer camp, Camp Chioka, that I mentioned to you.
Yes. Your mom and dad still run, right?
Yes. Yes. Actually, and our son, John Luke, is now the executive director out there. So it's a family thing. My grandparents actually started it in 1967 and my parents met there. And then summer between third and fourth grade, Willie and this was, I think, his first summer at camp. He tells the story. So his family did not have any money at that time. This was still, they were trying to get Duck Commander off the ground, selling duck calls, commercial fishing, you know, trying to get their business off the ground. And he remembers very well Miss Kay, his mom, bringing them to camp and saying, okay, I'm not sure if we can stay because I don't have the money to pay. I'm going to volunteer to work as a cook this summer and see if y'all can be campers. And she did that. And she worked in the kitchen as a cook.
I did not know that. So she was a cook in the kitchen at your family's summer camp.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh. And it was okay for her boys to get the opportunity to go to camp.
Yes. Yes. Wow. So they were campers that summer. It was Jace and Willie and then Al, the older brother, too. But I remember Jace and Willie because they were close to my age. And I looked across the way and thought he was so cute. He had these dimples and everything. And he asked me on the moonlight hike that year, which is crazy now to think about how young we were. But
thinking of a romantic thought like that at that age, right?
I know. Isn't that crazy? But I actually wrote about it in my diary that summer that I met a cute boy at camp. And everything. So, we met then. And then I remember in fifth grade, I went down to his family's house because they were doing these big fish fries. And they'd invite people down. And my friend and her family got invited. So they invited me to come. And I remember being so excited, asking mom and dad if I could go. And
how far away did y'all grow up from each other?
Like 35, 40 minutes.
They
still live exactly where they live now. Our family still lives where we lived in as well. So we're about 40 minutes. They're kind of down on the river, but in the same town. And they went to kind of like the country church and I went to like the city church, in West Monroe, but you know.
First Baptist, the big one.
Yeah, the bigger one. Yeah, that's right. And so, I came down there in fifth grade and I walked in. I'll never forget Phil was standing there and he looks just like he does now, like big beard, but his beard was black, not gray. And camo pants, white t-shirt. And he said, have you met my boys, Willie Jess and Jason Silas? And my friend and I were like, yes, sir. And he said, they'll make good husbands someday. And we were in fifth grade when he says this to us.
Wow.
And he said, they're good hunters. They're good fishermen. They're going to be good providers. And I'm like, he's pitching his sons to us. But we were in fifth grade.
But, you already had a crush on one anyway.
I know. I was like, I guess he somehow had this like knew something was up. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So we didn't start dating though till my senior year. We liked each other off and on, but you know, in the youth group together and all that kind of stuff. But my senior year, we started dating and got married the next year. We were 18 and 19, so we were babies.
Wow. I think I've heard you say that y'all are actually talking about marriage at like 17. At senior year of college, I guess.
Yeah, senior year of high school.
Parents' reaction to
that? Oh my gosh, they were not so sure about this decision. Yes, I was 17, And we had literally only been dating about 3 months, but we'd known each other since fifth grade or fourth grade, you know?
Yeah.
And so had, it was one of those, like, once we did get together, everyone knew, oh, this is gonna, this right. is gonna happen fast. But, I don't think my parents knew it was going to happen that fast. And so they were not for it. We, but to their credit, they, not only did I say I was going to get married, I had a scholarship to Harding. You mentioned Harding. I had a scholarship to college. I had been planning to go there my whole life. And when I first told them our plan was to get married and I wasn't going to go to college, I was okay. going to stay here and go to the local college because Willie was in seminary here. Well, you know, they loved Willie, but were like, you know, you're changing your whole life plans all of a sudden at 17 years old and all this. And so did not have it, did not really, we're not for it. I always say it's so funny the differences. My dad had like the PowerPoint presentation about all the reasons why we should wait and statistically and all that, because that's more my dad's personality and feels like, hey, go to Arkansas. You can get married at 16. You know, so there's a big difference there.
Yeah, you have both parameters.
There is a big difference. But we ended up, I came back and said, I have to go to college. I'm going to go to college. You know, I still want to marry you, but I'm going to go to college. And he actually broke up with me. So this could encourage any of you who are, you know, in this phase of like, I don't know what God has for me. But Willie said, no, I don't want to do long distance. Can't do it. And I said, okay, well, I got to go. And so I took off for college, boo-hooing the whole way. And I don't even think it was a week later that he called me and was like, never mind. I think I could do long distance. So of course I had to make him sweat a little bit. I was like, well, let me think about it. And then I called him back about 45 minutes later. I was like, okay, I thought about it. Let's get back together. Yeah. And then, we got married that January and he came to college with me. So we ended up both at Harding University, okay. which is so fun to have our college years together.
Yeah.
Did you live in
student housing and the whole thing, like in college?
We did not. We had an apartment right outside of Harding. And then we ended up getting a little cute little starter house. And we studied abroad a semester in Italy together as a young married couple, which was so much fun. And it was just, really sweet memories. We loved it. Most of our kids have decided to get married young as well. And so that's been sweet to see.
Yeah, I love that. So you mentioned the first time you met Phil and you were describing like, you know, he had the beard and it was just like what we see now of Phil. But had he already gone through his faith transformation by the time you met him?
Yes.
Like all of the things that you guys have been so open about of his past. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of it's featured in the new film, The Blind.
Yeah.
But by the time you joined the family, they were already this really passionate family focusing on their faith.
Yes. As a matter of fact, that was the cool thing. And we talk a lot about Willie and I, since doing The Blind and telling their family story. You know, we've talked a lot about how had that transformation not happened, had not Phil not come to Christ and Kate, which actually, you know, even he backtracked for that during their 10 rough years of marriage.
Yeah.
When Phil kicked Kay out of the house, this is where she came to. She came. That's how they ended up in West Monroe, Louisiana.
Oh, really?
Yes. Phil's sister, Jan, was here. She and her husband was in seminary here at the church that our family has gone to our whole life. And so that's how Kay ended up here in West Monroe. When Phil kicked her out, she came here to Jan's house, and who's featured in the film as well. And she's a big part of their story. But so she came here. The church that our family grew up in gave her an apartment and put her up. And, you know, a single mom with three little boys, not knowing what to do with no money. And helped her get back on her feet during that time when they were separated.
Wow.
So had that not happened, they would not be here in West Monroe, Louisiana. Willie and I would have never met. Had, you know, Kay not become a Christian, then Phil made the decision to turn his life around and ended up here as well. And this is where their family put down roots because of the church and everything here that had changed their life forever, which is what led to, you know, Willie showing up at that summer camp.
Exactly.
And us meeting. Yeah. Generation after generation.
There's because so of much that. Power in generational faith. And your family is such a beautiful example of that. I think, you know, we can all look back somewhere. Everybody's journey is so different. But for me, it was a grandmother who really in the family was kind of the only person who had a personal walk with the Lord. But it changed the following generations and my choice of how I've raised my family. And now my family's faith, you know, my sons, it's the most important thing to them as they pursue their. So it is those, you could say.
It is. And that's Willie always says, he's like, you know, even if it just impacted just our family, you know, just Phil and Kay and their four boys and our family going on and on, you know, how incredible is the impact of that legacy, that generational legacy.
Absolutely.
And impact. And yeah, Kay talks a lot about her grandmother because her grandmother, who she called Nanny, she was the one who just really instilled that faith in her. And even though she didn't really come to understand it till a little bit later in her life, whenever she was hit rock bottom as well, was when she really kind of turned her life over to Jesus and understand that. But those seeds of faith had been planted in her so young by her nanny, and also the seeds of staying in your marriage. She said it was her nanny that told her, like, someday you're going to have to fight for your marriage. And she never forgot her saying that. And that's what kind of kept her in it, even whenever she felt like it was hopeless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're not using the Core 4 products for long-term skin health, you're likely very underwhelmed by the results of your skincare routine. Think of building your skincare routine like building a house. You need a solid foundation, otherwise your house will collapse. The same thing applies to your skin. If you're not using the Core 4, your skin lacks the resources to be healthy. So what are the Core 4 products? A vitamin C, SPF, an exfoliant, and a retinoid. These four products protect, repair, and strengthen the skin, and they are the first four products that are really worth investing in because they are the powerhouse of your routine. Barefaced makes it easy to get started with these four essentials with their Bare Necessities Bundle. This bundle can be customized to your skin type when you take the 5-minute skin quiz on barefaced.com. They even break down exactly how to use each product and how to introduce them into your routine. Super simple and effective. Hey, got it from my mama listeners. Get a discount code. Use MAMA15 to get 15% off your first barefaced purchase.
How would you say in other ways that Kay has impacted you from that mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationship? How has she impacted you just as a wife, a mom, a mother, a woman?
Yeah. Well, first of all, she had four boys. And so just all of her daughter-in-laws, she loves each of us so and so sweetly and just loves us so well from day one. She never, ever treated us as like other or like, I'm going to take care of my son or whatever, you know, I'm going to take this out of my son always. She was always just so sweet and welcoming and just there for us and just in whatever way, if we needed to talk to her or whatever. So I try to be that for my daughter-in-laws as well. I love having a relationship with my daughter-in-laws and son-in-laws, and that's been so fun. But she first showed me what that looked like. It just gave me that gift. But also I mentioned, you know, in the movie, The Vine, it details out kind of, you know, their story. And the thing about that I think is so remarkable about Kay and her story, one, she was a strong woman. I mean, she was raising three boys on her own. She got pregnant. She was pregnant at 16, which even talking to her, I'm like, how did you finish? She finished high school. I'm like, how did you do that? Like, what were, she was on her own. It wasn't like she had, you know, a real supportive family at the time or anything. And so she, you know, she just always figured it out. And she, so she was a very strong woman. But beyond that, the way she forgave Phil and truly forgave him, I think is such an example, because he put her through some rough years, you know, very rough years, adultery, alcoholism, everything you can imagine. And when she, from the time I met her, whenever I was fifth grade, I showed up down there, they were like they are even now to this day. They flirt with one another. He tickles her and slaps her on the behind, and she giggles and laughs. And, you know, you could just see this, like, they truly loved each other. And what had to have happened for that to happen was she had to, like, truly forgive.
Right. Like actually, that's not an act that you can put on when you harbor like the bitterness that, that you should be allowed to harbor in that situation. Yeah. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. So that was something that, you know, she showed me really early on. And in our marriage, you know, there's times when you got to forgive, Like there's times when he's had to forgive me and I've had to forgive him, and seeing that example of like true forgiveness and what that can look like and what that can lead to. And like we talked about generationally.
Did you and Willie want a big family? Did you set out to have a lot of children?
So yes, but we did not, not necessarily six. We did not realize we were going to end up with six, but my grandmother, so my mom is one of six.
Okay.
And I love that. And I always love to have, you know, all the cousins. We have so many cousins around and holidays are big and they still are really big. So I absolutely have always loved a big family. So I said, yes, I did always, you know, plan to have a big family, and we had always planned to adopt. And so we, adoption is a part of our family story.
And that was part of the plan from the beginning. You went into marriage knowing that adoption might be in your future.
Yes. My senior year in high school, which was when we were dating, my Bible teacher, I went to a Christian school, and my Bible teacher adopted, and he had a little five-year-old boy that he adopted. And I just thought he was the cutest thing ever. And I remember my Bible teacher just talking about how that scripture in James, where it talks about religion that is pure and faultless, is to take care of widows and orphans. And I just took that very seriously, you know. And I remember Willie and I were dating, and I said, I really feel like I want to adopt someday. And he was on board from the first minute. He never questioned it. He was like, yeah, let's do it. We'll do it. And so we always knew we wanted to adopt. But I feel like I kind of thought we'd probably end up at four. My plan was we'll have three biologically and then we'll adopt a fourth.
Yeah.
And
your plan.
That was exactly.
Not exactly that we get to plan that, right?
Yes. Emphasis on my plan. Yes, yeah. Exactly. So we had two, and then I just didn't get pregnant again with the third. And the first two were fairly easy, you know, to get pregnant. And then, so I was like, you know, maybe I've always said I wanted to adopt. Maybe it's all this time. And we found out about Will, just miraculous. We got him, you know, we found out about him 1 week. He was in our home the next. It was just
how old was
the greatest gift. He was 5 weeks old.
Oh, brand new baby. Okay.
Newbie. He was the cutest little, you know, cutest little guy. And yeah, we found out about him. We got him in December of 2001. In January of 2002, I found out I was pregnant with Bella. So
wow.
Our fourth came. So they were 10 months apart, which is crazy. We called them Destructo 1 and Destructo 2. They were like a pair. They were a duo. I said one would like push the window up and the other would climb out. Like that's how they were. They were crazy. So yeah. So then we really thought we were done. And, then we decided to bring in an exchange student. Our daughter, Rebecca, came to us at 16 as an exchange student, and we just fell in love with her. And we said, hey, you can stay another year if you'd like. And she did. And now she's 33 maybe, and has never left and has our grandbabies and everything. And so, so that's how we ended up with five. I remember I said one time we have four kids, and, my daughter said, no, we don't. We have five. And I was like, you're right. Rebecca had just become ours. And she really did. She has a mom in Taiwan still that loves her very much. And she still has a relationship with, but she's
claim.
Yeah, that's right. We claim her.
That's awesome.
And then I remember thinking we were through, and we were at a fundraiser actually for adoption. And someone asked us the question, you know, will you adopt again? And as I was mouthing no, Willie was like, well, you never know, you know. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe we will.
Sorry, think of this.
Exactly. And then Rowdy came into our life. He was 12 when he came.
Did he come with that name,
Rowdy? Yes, we were like, Rowdy Robertson, it's meant to be. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
And
I love
so
that.
He came into our life and we adopted him when he was 13.
Okay.
And so that's how we ended up with six.
Oh my
God's
goodness
plan.
So awesome. So, of course, we need to talk about Sadie just from a standpoint of people love your daughter, the impact that she's made on the lives of so many young people. I cannot imagine the pride that you have in seeing her so bold in her faith. When did you see just something maybe a little extra special in her that you knew that she was going to be this just shining light for the Lord?
Yeah. Well, I love that now, as a mom of adult kids, looking back and seeing those seeds that God planted in them so young. And I have a journal where I wrote, you know, things about each of them when they were like a baby, two, three. And you can just go back and read those and be like, that was you. Like, God, you were that at two that you are at 22. You know, yeah. It's just amazing how God plants that. And now having grandkids, I'm just seeing that so evidently in them. I'm like, I know who you are. I know God, how God created you so specifically and so originally. Her whole ministry is Live Original. I'm sitting in front of, I'm in her her podcast studio. Her podcast office, yeah. And so Live Original. And just God, I just think God creates each of our kids so uniquely and so originally. And it's really is so much fun to see. But when Sadie was 16, we had a big sweet 16 party, and my dad pulled out this video of her from when she was 5 years old, and she was literally preaching on our coffee table. And I remembered this. I hadn't seen it in years, but I remembered that she had done it, because when she was young, she was very interested in God and Jesus and heaven and hell and the devil, all those things. I was kind of worried about her for a little bit. She was like, so I was like, okay. But no, she would just ask all the questions about everything just at a very young age. Mm-hmm. Like we'd come home from church and she'd be in the back of the car just preaching to us on the ride home from church. And so I have this video of her standing on the coffee table at our house, and she is preaching. And my dad pulled this video up on her sweet 16 and played it at her party, which of course she was a little embarrassed. Like, "Two Papa, really, you're going to play a video of me at five at my sweet 16. But he's playing it, and she's standing there, and she's just preaching. She's like, "God loves you. I don't care if you're a policeman or a jail person." That's what she said, a jail person. "God loves you." And she is just going off, and she has some pretty good theology and all of it. She was doing good. And then she says, "And even if I get famous someday, I will not think about myself. I will remember God." At 5 years old, she said that.
Wow.
And when we saw it, because this was kind of the height of the dynasty, we all just started bawling, because we were like, God prepared you. He had put that on you at five. Because, like, why would she say, "Even if I'm famous"? Like, we started this conversation. Our family lives in West Monroe, Louisiana. We ran a summer camp. I was a children's minister. Willie was a youth minister at our church.
There was no reason at that age to think she would be exposed to fame.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Wow. There was no indication she would be famous someday. And yeah, and the fact that she said that, we were like, whoa, God was placing that on her and was preparing her for what he had for her this many years ago. But you know, beyond that, even I remember in, I think it was sixth or seventh, right? Whenever you like transition from like elementary to middle school.
Yeah.
Remember, she called a meeting for all the girls, and the girls that were just behind her that were about to come into middle school. And she asked her teachers if she could do it. And she was like, "Can I have a conversation with all them?" And she just like did a little Bible study with them and said, "Look, you're about to enter middle school. And that's whenever sometimes girls get mean to each other and all that. And it's like, I just want to tell y'all, don't do it." And just like encourage them. So even she was that leadership that she was displaying at in sixth grade.
And to mentor others.
Sixth grade, seventh grade. Yeah. I saw that. And why her whole ministry is called Live Original. She was, when she hit middle school, she remembers kind of feeling that, you know, insecurities come up and lack of confidence and all that. And so what she did was she started just posting scripture. I come in one day into her bedroom, and she had scripture she had written and put on her mirror. And this is like, you know, seventh grade, eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And just kind of understanding that what God called her, who God called her to be, and that her confidence is not in herself.
Right.
And Hebrews 10:35, the confident trust that I have in the Lord, that's going to be richly rewarded. And she says she remembers just God speaking that over her. "Your confidence is not in you. This confidence is in me." and like, you don't have to carry it. I've got it. I'm going to carry it for you.
Right.
And so anyway, just kind of seeing the way God prepared her through each thing. And then even going back, we have a video of her as a kid when she was being, you know, making announcements and starting her own little podcast on, you know, on the computer.
Yeah.
Or a little recorder, you know, things like that. You're like, oh yeah, you were doing that.
All part of the plan.
Even back then. Yes.
Yeah, that's then. Really, so just seeing her like kind of walk this journey that, you know, is intentional for her. I know that's going to be awesome. And then you get to be involved as well. You appear on the podcast sometimes.
Yeah.
And then I guess you're a part of Live Original as well, right?
Yes. We just had our big LO Sister Conference.
Yes. Where was that?
It was here in Monroe, Louisiana, at our Civic Center, which is so fun because she used to do a tour. She did Live Original Tour several years where we would go around to like 16 cities. And it was so fun. We'd get on a bus and wake up in a new city. And we had fun doing that. But she's in a new season of life as a mom and wife and mom and all that, and kind of trying to figure out what that looks like. And so the last few years, she's done a big conference right here in West Monroe.
That's pretty cool.
And it has been amazing. Yes. We had about 4,000 girls in our Civic Center and almost 400 got baptized, which was amazing.
That is awesome. It's amazing. All the stuff going on right now with just true sense of revival that I just hope keeps building.
Yes. It is really fun to see what God's doing in that generation.
It's absolutely. Yeah.
Really exciting. So I love to just get to be the cheerleader and support. And I've just kind of been, I'm just here with her in whatever ways she needs and try to kind of walk with her through each of it. And, thankfully she, you know, we have fun doing it together.
Yeah. So that's pretty awesome. Tell me what it's like seeing your kids become parents.
So fun.
How many grandkids do you have now?
Okay. Well, this is like top new news. So we just had our seventh a couple of days ago. I'm sure by the time this comes out, it'll be out. Yeah. So
time.
We just had our seventh grandbaby.
About the engagement. It hasn't happened yet. So
I know,
about that.
Yeah, that's right. So we're very excited. It's absolutely a dream. It's so much fun. And everybody's right there around us. So literally all our grandbabies.
Blessing of all. I cannot believe you are so fortunate to have. I mean, I'm sure you have friends. I do as well. But now I've got friends just ahead of me that are having the grandbabies and all of that. But some of them, they're so far away and it breaks my heart for them. So I know that you count those blessings every day of having them nearby.
Yes, that would be really hard. Although, like, I always try to not put pressure on our kids, you know, wherever God calls you, but secretly hope that they would all come back, and they have, and it's been so fun. So yeah, they're all kind of within walking distance. So I get to see them, all our grandkids, on a daily basis, and it's just a dream. And it's fun to see each one parents differently. You know, there's kind of like the differences in how they parent, even in how they each dress their kids. It's so cute because you could see the parent's personality and how they dress their kids, you know, and all that.
Yeah, I've never thought about that. Yeah.
It is fun. Yeah. I've been saying, we need to start a little kid style account because each of their styles are like so different and unique, and it fits their family. You know, it's really sweet. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cute. So if you are helping out at, let's say, John Luke's house versus Sadie's house, do you have to remember what their rules are a little bit about who can have what? Or like, I bet there's some things you got to keep up with.
Yes. You know, everybody is really pretty good. Like, they definitely have differences in what they do, but they're pretty relaxed about, you know, whatever, we'll be all right. You know, now it's funny because the kids are like, they know that they're not supposed to have red food dye. So Zane, who's like, he's four now, he is the funniest one about red food dye because he knows, like, no red food dye. Like, that is like, an out. And he said something one time about how when he gets big, when somebody asked him like what he's going to do when he gets big, and he was like, eat red food dye. We're like, oh no. It's so funny.
He's the biggest sweet in the world.
that's his one thing he knows he can't do, although like everything else, they're very relaxed, but that's the one thing.
That's so fun. So if we go back to talking about Live Original, which is the brand that Sadie, I guess it's the name of her ministry, there's going to be a component to that, or is it already out with the actual music, LO Worship?
Yes, LO Worship. Yeah, that's been a dream on Sadie's heart for a long time. And that's not something we really, well, we had a Christmas album called Dug the Halls, like, but that was just.
Yeah, you sang on that, didn't you?
A fluke. Yeah, that was just a thing. But we, you know, that's not really something that we knew much about that world, but Sadie has really felt a call to do worship music and, you know, just how worship, how music and worship and being able to sing those words over yourself and sing those words to God transform you and changes yeah. you. And so she's always wanted to do something with that. And so it's been about a 4-year process of just kind of gradually seeing how God has brought that together. And this is their second kind of like album that they put out. This one's called Holy in My Heart, and it is beautiful. And our son Will sings on the LA Worship. He has there's a new song called Presence that he sings lead on. And it's been beautiful to see. It's interesting because when she first started doing this, she was living in Nashville. This was, you know, she went to Nashville after high school, and lived there for about 4 years. And she was living in Nashville after Duck Dynasty. Okay. Yes. Uh-huh. And, so she was kind of, you know, thinking, oh, I'm in Nashville. I'll start this here. And there's so many talented people and all that. And it turns out it didn't really take off until she came back here. And now it's like, our son Will is a part of it. My very best friend, like her son's name's Reeves, and he's one of the lead vocalists and plays guitar in the worship collective. And so Sadie and he grew up together, like in diapers, you know. And then one of Sadie's cousins, Layla, who's just got an incredible voice. And then another one of her friends that she played Little League, you know, All Stars. With, you know, so ended up becoming just like family. And
then the movie The Blind, that, I mean, just from the trailer alone, I mean, it's such a vulnerable part of the family story. And I feel like there's so much there that people don't realize exactly what, you know, Phil and Miss Kay went through. And I think it kind of goes back to our conversation about the generational faith, but to see power of that transformation in the movie. It's so impactful. And you serve as one of the producers on that, right?
Yeah. I was actually really involved with every aspect of it. It's been a 2-year process for us and me specifically. So after Duck Dynasty, I just really felt called to produce more content that's faith and family friendly and positive and hopeful and all that. Just realizing the impact Duck Dynasty had on people's lives. This little like silly show about our family, but we had this prayer at the end and it impacted people in really powerful ways. And so, you know, I think I understood more about the power of entertainment and how it's shaping our culture and wanted to be more a part of that. And so we started a production company called Tread Lively. And this is our first film out of the gate. We do podcasting.
Okay.
This is our first film. Yeah. So we do podcasting and unscripted, but this is our first film. So this has been a true labor of love to do our family story right out of the gate. And it has been emotional, but yeah, was involved in all the aspects of it. And it was so fun to just see people, you know, from the casting and the set design and all the costume design and all the things come together to make this.
Did y'all film it in West Monroe?
We filmed it here in like Shreveport, which is about an hour and a half from here.
Okay.
Right where Phil and Kay grew up. And a lot of the locations were right where they actually grew up. And then we filmed some in West Monroe as well. So all right here in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Which was really, really fun. But yeah, it's been an emotional ride for our family because it is, it tells the hard parts of the story. Yeah. But
how did Miss Kay handle seeing them act it out or like to actually kind of almost relive it, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah, she did great, which I think also is a testament to how she like truly forgave because it didn't seem like it drummed up any, you know, old bad feelings, which could happen, you know, but she was emotional, of course. She cried. We all cried when we watched it and Phil cried as he watched it. And I feel like it's been harder for him because it is showing his hard parts, you know, and we actually asked him what he thought about the actor who played him and we met. Like, did you think he was a good actor? And Phil said, not much. And that was his response. And we were like, well, what? Didn't you think he did a good job? He was like, I didn't like that guy. Like, I didn't. And he's like, I didn't like the guy that I was then. Yeah. He's like, I didn't like the guy that I was then. And it was hard for him to see that, you know. And but what Phil said from day one is like, if I can help somebody else with my story, I'm willing to do it. If someone can know Jesus because of seeing my story and understanding that they're not too far gone. If I wasn't too far gone, the worst of sinners, they're not too far gone. Right. And so that's been his goal from the very beginning of doing it. And he's kept his eye on that and knows that's the actual impact that can happen. And I really believe that lives are going to be changed. Families are going to be saved because of this movie.
That's amazing. My goodness, your hands in so many, I mean, just all of the positive things that you've been able to be an advocate for, from, you know, adoption and foster care and just touching people with your family's story, and then figuring out creative ways to grow the ministry and just to get more Jesus out there. I just applaud you for it. It's really, really inspiring. So, well, and one of the questions I ask all my guests is, what would you say your, usually it's son or daughter, got from their mama, but you got six kids and you don't have all day. So, and I guess you could talk about Sadie. How would you say, other than the fact that she looks so much like you, and you look just like your mother, who is gorgeous, by the way.
Well, thank you.
Some strong genes in the family. But what would you say that Sadie got from her mama?
Oh, that is interesting. So she has a book called Live Fearless, and she has a tattoo called Fearless. And she actually has struggled with anxiety, as you know, in part of her life, and she shares that a lot. But she really does live fearless. She, even though she's scared, even though things scare her, she still does it. And you know, we talk a lot about that together, and just about how, you know, with God, like, we have a spirit of power, not a spirit of fear or timidity. And so I think that she and I both try to walk in a way that is fearless, not because we are fearless or because we've got it all together, but because we actually trust God and we know that his word is true.
Right.
We believe what he says is true and active and alive. And so we try to live fearless.
That's pretty awesome. I love that. Well, it's been so great to talk to you. Thank you for the time and all of this. And I'm really excited for people to hear just more about your heart and your story. And I just think it's really awesome the way that you guys took that platform that you were given and impacted so many families, and were able to do it in an entertaining way that attracted people as opposed to push them away, you know? So well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks. It's been a privilege.
I do hope that you will check out The Blind. It is such a beautiful story of forgiveness and redemption. Thank you to Corey for sharing her story, and to you for listening. Be sure to follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode, and subscribe on YouTube as well. I love bringing you these inspiring stories each week. I want to share with you a miracle skincare product that works overnight. Just kidding. If anyone says that to you, run. Skincare takes time and consistency. However, let me tell you about Bareface Toning Pads. They don't work overnight, but you can start seeing results as soon as 2 weeks after using them. Okay, so who needs them? Everyone. They're skin smoothing pads that help prevent breakouts, remove dull, dead skin, and improve the absorption of your skincare products. Basically, they reveal a more even, healthy glow with every swipe. They're Bareface's best-selling products with over 2,000 five-star reviews and over 200,000 units sold just in 2022. So a fan favorite, to say the least. They literally could not keep these toning pads in stock for the first 2 years after they launched. So if you are looking for an easy first product to get started with, this is a must-have in your routine. Don't forget, you can use the code MAMA15 to get 15% off your first Bareface purchase.